this is. You're a wizard, right? A Star Wars Episode 7 The Force Awakens fanfic, written by Moore Bain and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated G and is gen, with additional tags for Alternate Universe Fusion, Alternate Universe Harry Potter setting. The first thing a small child in Britain learns about wizards is that there aren't any more of them, which feels like an awfully rough deal. Ray's no stranger to rough deals. She's not a small child, either, but somehow she hasn't left behind stories shared in the dark. In Simon's pub, she sits at the brightest table and does her fiddliest repair work, because Simon will let her do that if she fixes things for him, and the regulars sit in the corner full of shadows. On Mondays, Tuesdays, and sometimes Sundays, when the regulars are the only ones who come in, they debate the good old days and whether they really were the bad old days, and when it was that magic really vanished. It depends on the age of who's there. At JKU, believing in magic meant you weren't tough enough for the real world. Voldemort was part of a skipping rhyme. The children of JKU believed only in homegrown rituals. For example, no child ever said the name of the home in full, if they could help it. It was a point of pride, a prescription far more powerful than a curse. But that isn't the only way the real world doesn't match how Ray always thought it would be. And though Simon never gives her anything free but light and warmth, she has a use for both of those. She doesn't have anything to say about magic, but she listens. And she recognizes the owl when she sees it. The owl's huddling in between the boards over the old bakery window, being poked at with sticks by kids from the home. The screeching stops when she arrives. It was already hurt, the biggest boy mutters, when she yells at them to leave it alone. The owl has something attached to its leg, thin and pale. And first she thinks he was right, and it's a splint, but then the owl uses its beak to push it back into place, as if it's just another feather. The regulars say that you can tell a wizard's owl, because it'll be carrying mail. The thin white thing on the owl's leg could be a rolled-up piece of paper. Or she could just be imagining things. She's never seen an owl like this before. Obviously, it's owl-shaped, but its feathers are a model of white, gray, and tan so bright it's almost orange. Maybe this is its baby plumage. Maybe it's very young. She doesn't have gloves or a sack or anything else that would allow her to grab a wild bird, so after looking at it for a minute, she turns to go home. She doesn't know anyone who's good with birds, but maybe there's an official society she can call. The owl hops down from its perch in the window and starts following her. She's not sure what to do about that, but it doesn't seem aggressive, and she doesn't see the point in chasing it away. So, she starts talking to it. It seems to like that. It gets closer and closer, and suddenly it hops up off the ground and flies right up to her shoulder. She squawks. She freezes. It's cute and all, but even a baby owl probably has some idea of how to use its beak. She closes her eyes, and then opens them, because there is a crashing sound, and a young man wearing jeans and a long, heavy cloak is standing in front of her, mouth agape, a broken broom in his hand. You found him! She just has to ask. Are you a wizard? He stares at her, which is fair, because it's a stupid question. Then, yeah, he says breathlessly. Yeah, I'm a wizard, and we need to run. Ray opens her mouth, but both why and where are answered before she can speak by something green and bright that comes from over her shoulder and hits the pavement with a smell of ozone. Ray's never seen anything like it before. Like a fireball elongated into a line, some kind of laser weapon, but it screams danger to her. Come on. She and the man say to each other at exactly the same time. He reaches out a hand to her, but she shakes it off. She's never seen him before. That means he doesn't know where to go. She does. She runs. He follows. At least he can keep up with her. He reaches for her hand again. No, she says. We need to dodge. Because another bolt of light has just hit a streetlight and turned it dark. And running with hands clasped is stupid. He was reaching for the arm the owl's perched on. The owl hissed at him. If she had breath to spare, she'd laugh. She leads him to the train track underpass. Partly because that takes them through a boulevard with a grimy, translucent plastic roof, but also because the underpass is designed for people on foot or on bicycles, and maybe whatever's flying after them can't get in. And then she remembers the door set halfway along the underpass that doesn't lead, as she thought it did when she was 11, to a cupboard, but to quite a large storage room, and most importantly, to another door on the other side of the underpass. Surely they can go somewhere from there. She runs down the bike ramp to the underpass, the owl digging its claws into her shoulder. Here, she says. They can follow, the man pants at her, waving his broom. On these. The lights in the underpass are always at least half broken. They're in luck. This afternoon, it's the near half. Maybe the gloom will buy them seconds. Speaking of buying seconds, can you unlock a door? She gasps back. No, he says. Wizards. Not good for much, clearly. Ray never admits this aloud, but she believes in luck. By the time they're at the utility door, one hand is in her pocket for a bit of metal she can pick the lock with, and with the other hand, she reaches for the handle and hopes. It swings open. They fall through. She has to put her arm up to stop the man tumbling after her into a stack of road cones. Then she closes the door behind him and locks it, in the dark, by feel. There, she says. He's still catching his breath. I can't unlock doors, he says. But they can. Fine, Ray says. It figures. It's fine. This way. This time, she lets him take her hand. She tugs him through the darkness, feeling out coils of wire and piles of planks with her boots. The owl's claws relax a little on her shoulder now that they've slowed down. Not much changes in here. Some of these things might have been sitting in the same spot since the year the underpass was built. And some would, except over the years, she took them, worked on them, learned from them. It only makes sense that this is where she has run to, since this place helped shape her, too. They reach the outer door. This time, Ray knows there's no hope of finding it unlocked. She drops the man's hand and grabs a lockpick. As she's fitting it to the lock, there's a soft glow behind her. Their pursuers have made their way in. "Hold still," she mutters, leaning against the door with one hand, feeling the lockout with the other. "There. Help me with this," she adds, as softly as possible. There's a bolt as well as a lock. Not quietly enough. A flash of red lights them up from behind. Another sizzling laser strike bursts across the door between them, with enough violence to blow half of it away. The man ducks through it first. This time, when he reaches back to pull her out too, she lets him. She thought they'd have more time at this point. She can think of only one place to go. "The car yard," she tells him, and leads the way again, not waiting for wizards to blast the place apart behind them and pour out and upwards into the air. The next part is a 2-mile dash. They have a head start, but on this side of the train tracks, there's a lot of empty ground. A lumber yard and a struggling garden place, and not much else but fields and concrete yards along the road. Places with locked fences. They've managed to dash out of sight of the underpass before their pursuers got through, but once the wizards on broomsticks figure out just how few places there are for Ray and the owl and the man to go, Ray is sure they'll hone in on the car yard. The car yard is another place that's abandoned by everyone except Ray. Nothing's come through its gates by wheel for at least 5 years. The owner went bankrupt and left town, and there's some kind of weird council dispute, and the end of the story is that all the cars and fridges and junk just sits there. It's full of broken things, but they aren't getting any more broken. For Ray, that's kind of comforting. She has pet projects scattered across the yard, cars that she's been tinkering with for months or even years. Some are just for practice. Some are almost good enough to drive out of here. No one would know to look at them which ones she cares about. She's counting on that. The man says, "What?" when she jerks him to a stop beside a car, with its right side levered up and the tarpaulin stretched across its rear window. The owl screeches in agreement. Ray grins. "Hop in," she says. "Keep quiet." She jerks open the front passenger door and then wiggles her way through to the back seat. After a moment, he follows. He closes the door behind him, delicately. Ray almost giggles. He has more trouble than her squeezing between the front seats, but he makes it through. They're silent for a minute, arranging themselves in the back seat and hunkering down. The owl hops off Ray's arm and makes as if to explore the front seats. Ray reaches out an arm to herd it back. It looks back at her. "Don't," she clarifies. It hops back, more responsive to the words than the gesture. How smart are wizard owls anyway? This one's already put up with more than any normal owl ever would. Under his breath, the man says, "What is this car anyway?" Ray murmurs back, a little defensively. "It's a Ford Falcon AU, circa 2000. Who are you anyway?" He swallows. "Phineas," he says. He says the name like it tastes bad. "Okay, then. I might call you Finn, then," she says. Unexpectedly, he smiles. "I'm Ray." There's a flash of red light somewhere behind them. Ray sees it reflecting off something in the left mirror. Along with the red light, there's a crash. I think they're just aiming curses around, Finn says, under the cover of the crash, trying to get us to run. What can they do to a car? Ray asks levelly, as though it's only of mild interest. After all, they're here now. What they did to the door? Finn whispers back. Well, that's not good. Though that was a strong one. That was probably Phasma herself. Another name that he pronounces with distaste. The owl reconsiders its earlier caution and hops through to the front seat. Stay down! Ray hisses at it. She's kind of gutted the glove compartment. It hops in. Maybe it has the same affinity cats have to drawers? She doesn't think it can make too much trouble there, and at least it's out of sight. And if she'd said that thought aloud, it would have qualified as famous last words. There's a puff of blue, glittery smoke that rises up from the glove box, like the most absurd booby trap Ray's ever heard of. And like nothing she's ever suspected was there. It gusts through the car, smelling like grilled cheese, and flies through the window. There's a call in the distance. What did you do? Ray hisses at the owl, feeling horribly betrayed. There's a shadow over them. Ray doesn't want to look up. Merlin's piss, Finn says. I'm so sorry. Then something lands over them with a thump, blotting out the daylight. There's a musky, ashy, sweaty smell. They're covered in something. She wonders if they've been bundled up in some kind of net, car and all. That doesn't make any sense, but really nothing about this makes any sense. Then a chink of light returns. There's a softer, crunching sound, and a man ducks under the black material covering them and taps on the front passenger window. Mind if I come in? He doesn't wait for them to answer. Not much an Expelliarmus can do to Chewie up there, but he'll thank me not to use him as a shield any longer than I have to. Even to cross paths with my favorite lost car. His lost car? Ray sees a flash of red where the daylight peeks in. The thing above her howls. Ray's mind presents her with the conclusion that the thing stretched over them isn't some kind of cloth. It's a wing. The man takes keys out of his pocket and jabs them into the Ford Falcon's ignition. There, he says. Hold on, he yells upwards. Got a good grip, Chewie? There's another howl. The man turns the keys. Ray hears a pop, then a roar. Then she feels a wave of nausea. The car rocks and settles back on the ground, but they're no longer tilted to the left side. And the pile of cars to the right of them is just gone, replaced by a green field. That was a portkey, Finn says, sounding stunned. Good boy, the man in the front seat says. He sounds pleased. He pats the steering wheel. God almighty, I've missed this girl. Ray's tempted to ask him why he left her in a junkyard so long then. Or even to ask him what he sees in the blue AU. It was never more than a mid-range model even when it was new. But then he might ask her why she made such a project of it. And she can't really explain that. She just liked it, was all. "Where are we?" Ray asks instead. "Who are those people? What's going on?" Finn and the man exchange a knowing sort of look that exasperates Ray all over again. "We're out of danger for now," the man says. "Explanations in time. But someone will make them, I suppose. You'll need them. You're a witch, girl." He pats the dashboard again. "This little girl wouldn't have taken to you so much if you weren't." "Oh," Ray says. Just like that, she's not mad anymore. She's not even scared. She should be. But she doesn't have room to be. She's so excited at the thought of what she might do. And it's dawning on her that, along with two strange men, an owl, and a dragon, she's left the world she knew behind. This one is entirely new. The end. Author's Notes. Written for Flip Flop Diva for the Crossovering 2016 exchange. Reader's Notes. Hey friends, 2021 has thrown me for a loop and I have just like completely lost track of all the days, but guess what? Surprise, very late surprise, today is my 11th podficiversary. That's right, my podfic catalog is old enough to go to Hogwarts. So here is this Harry Potter fusion, because Star Wars is where my brain still is. And I loved all of the little details that just, like, synced up the way you could tell. Like, BB-8, Baby, Jakku, JKU, and the Falcon, and the overpass scene with the running and how it really is the running through the junkyard on Jakku. Like, so many of these things, these beats of the story from Morbane just, like, hit all the right parallels in the best way possible. But yeah, this is a super last-minute happy 11th podficiversary because it's 2021 and time is passing in leaps and jumps, and I did not realize it was my podficiversary until about 6 hours ago. So this is maybe not the exactly the fastest turnaround time I've ever had on a podfic, but it's pretty close. But yeah. Here's crossing our fingers and hoping that my podfic catalog gets Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. Yeah, you know what? Whatever, house. As long as you try your best. But yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.